What do you know, Roberto? We've only got, between the shows that you and I do on the House of Cards, we've got this one.
And right.
With you and me, only one more.
Yep, because I'll be on vacation for the next 2 weeks, which is kind of weird. I rarely leave, but it was a weird kind of thing that I'll be gone for at least two Thursdays this week. Next week, not this week, but.
Hey, but two Thursdays out of, what are we at, 50 now?
Something like that.
That's fine. You're so deserved. Next week, I'm not really sure exactly the guests we have lined up, but I'll be here with a guest, and we will talk everything. We're going to talk the British show. We're going to talk everything about this current show, and then when you come back, we're going to be wrapping it all up for season 4.
Yeah, it'll finally be over. And I mean that it's finally over, but also in a good way of like, because it's so funny. And we talked about this in the pre-show a bit and, you know, when you have a story that has about three different threads going on and that, you know, that at least by the end of the season, one has to be wrapped up because you can't have three things dangling at the end. It just doesn't work out. But you can have at least one kind of, you know, be the throughput, the through wave to the next season. If there is going to be a next season kind of thing, which, I mean, you hire a new showrunner, it's going to be. And saying that, it's such a weird thing to know, okay, this, you know, looking at all the storylines are happening and saying, okay, this one has the potential to go on to the next season. Mm-hmm. These two do not. And to know that to me means this is the one I really care about now, because the other ones have to be wrapped up by in about two or three episodes, well, if not sooner.
Just so in case somebody's coming across this video or audio in a weird way and they're wondering, you know, we'll say this episode will be about season 4, episode 10, chapter 49.
Right.
However, before we do that, you've already sort of talked about this. Who are the folk who? Which characters do you think are going to depart? Because I think this is now time for you to give us your season finale predictions. So let's.
So here's we'll start with the C thread, and that being Stamper, because I think that's a very definitive C thread now, and Stamper kind of wrestling with his guilt of all the actions that he's done over his lifetime to, being, you know, in the service of Frank Underwood, you know, and he's done a lot. He's done some really shady things and hard, you know, crazy shady things. So I think that's going to get wrapped up before our next season. So that'll probably be done the finale. And either A, Stamper's going to commit suicide, because that's a definitive way to get rid of a character. B, he's going to resign, because that's a definitive way to get rid of a character. Or C, he's going to commit his undying love to Frank, and then either A or B will happen. Because, you know, at this end of the season, we saw, you know, during Seth and Stamper's kind of confrontation where they're, you know, they're kind of, you know, Seth is like, I see you falling apart, man. And he is. You see him donate $5,000 to the, you know, the fund of essentially where Frank's liver should have gone. And then he starts writing an email entitled Francis Underwood. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that there's only, you know, either A, he resigns the last and final, you know, thread is that it becomes his giant data dump explaining everything that Frank has done wrong and all the dirt he has on it. And then he commits suicide because either he somehow doesn't get out of this in the way that he wants to get out of it. That's my theories on that C thread.
Okay. So
might be wrong, but I have, but something is, they wouldn't show that him writing an email entitled Francis Underwood for nothing. You know, if it were a email to him, an email about him, or some type of like note, there's no reason why you would have him almost drink, then donate $5,000 and then immediately start writing an email. Like those things don't happen, you know, in tandem. Like he would donate $5,000 maybe. And if he'd be like, all right, I've, you know, My soul is clean. And they would just start reading the news article and they'd cut. But because it did the whole, you know, the $5,000 And then kind of, you know, the articles are in the background and then he opens up email as he's writing something. It's like, well, that means something. And there's only so many ways that goes down. And then they all really don't, you know, cause again, Stamper as a character doesn't seem to be one that likes to work with others beyond Frank, even though he should. And that's something he can't do. And so to me, again, that there's only so many ways that can come out. So that's that thread.
Okay.
The A thread, of course, is the election of Frank and Claire. You know, we've already got that pretty much wrapped up. In other words, we've got the idea that Claire is now part of the ticket. They will run together and they'll do whatever they need to do against the Conways. And either A, they'll win, or B, they'll lose. And that's the end of the series. Although if they lose, there's really no series left. It's far more, probably far more likely that they'll win or something along those lines, but that's the A thread, and the A thread's pretty much wrapped up as it is. We already know that it's just going to be trials and tribulations on the election. And that could be a multitude of things. That could be nothing. Who knows? And wrapped up into that is, of course, the idea of, you know, where does Tom fit in all this sort of mix and all that kind of stuff and whatever. In other words, it's to me that almost looks like a repeat of Claire with that photographer guy back in season one. It just seems like again, repeat, which has sort of been the weird Claire kind of thing where things just seem to kind of come back because Claire's got a whole bunch of stuff she needs to deal with that she doesn't even know she needs to deal with.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah. So what about Claire in relation to Frank and the election?
Like I said, that's pretty much wrapped up because, you know, they're both now the nominees for the Democratic Party. I mean, in other words, the only thing that would go down differently would be, well, Frank goes down and then, you know, Claire then becomes the, you know, presumptuous presidential candidate or something, you know, but, and that doesn't seem interesting because all of that hinges on the only thread that I see potentially going through to season five. If there is a season five, or potentially I see, you know, changing season five, who our cast of characters are going to be. And if, for example, they drop the idea of having Kevin Spacey in the show or something along those lines, or they just get rid of Frank as a character, which would be interesting. And I'd like that a lot just because it'd be cool. Kind of, it's like, oh, wow, they took a chance.
I agree. I'm like that with shows. I like it when they do something so extreme and it tends to, make the real hardcore base fans angry. I like that kind of stuff.
It'd be interesting. It'd be totally interesting.
It may not work.
But I have a feeling that if that had happened, mm-hmm. That I would have, even though, you know, I tend to keep myself away from spoilers and I try my best to, you know, be away, you know, away from that. I feel that I would have heard a little bit more of a murmur over Twitter if something like that happened. Mm-hmm. At least a rumbling or two, just like, holy crap, this happened. Oh my God, this, I can't believe. Like, I would have heard some type of even like rumbling. So I don't think that is. But what I think is the thread, and it makes a lot of logical sense, and it makes a lot of story sense, because of how certain things have gone on between season to season, season to season, is usually the last episode of a season has left us with this like, oh my God, you know, like season one left us with Russo dead and Zoe Barnes knowing that, then tying into season two and being crashed. Season two ended with Rachel running away and Stamper almost dead. Right? You know, and that carried on of that.
Yeah, that was a real that was. I think most people believe that he was dead the way
right.
They shot it with his eyes
right.
open.
Yeah. Season three ended with I want a divorce, and that carrying on to the next one, and that'd be like, well, so the Underwood's completely, you know, hosed, whatever.
And now they're doing all right.
Right. So. The thing is that the only thread that's dangling right now, as of this episode, and it's the B thread, because it doesn't get that much light, but it's getting a lot more light now. And it's actually our first thing that we're going to talk about.
Okay.
And it's the only one that I see that has the ability to be an interesting through line to season four or five, sorry. And have that sort of ability to either A, be resolved in the first episode, or B, completely, you know, tear this whole thing down is that Hammerschmidt.
Hammerschmidt, yes.
Is the idea that he is now learning all the things and everything.
Yeah, basically in this episode, you see him discovering the actual route of the vice presidential motorcade back in 2014, and it's going east in Bates City, Missouri. And I didn't know off the bat what that was, and I sort of looked it up, and then of course later he says Lanigan, but I didn't catch that my first time around.
Yeah.
So what they did was he found the paper trail that shows that Frank lied and said that he was just supporting a House Minority Whip, in Kansas City. But what he did was he showed up, made appearance, and then drove to a meeting to meet with Lanigan, who he should not have been meeting. And that was about them getting funneling money into the Democratic Party as opposed to the Republican Party. And there's the sort of money laundering issue that he discovered.
And Hammerschmidt makes the comment, if he's covering this up, what else could he be covering up? And of course, during this episode, which one of my favorite scenes and one of the amazing scenes and sealing up another dangling thread when Frank meets with Durant at essentially, letter opener point, he drops the truth and sort of holds back, but we know that sort of thing. So, because Hammerschmidt's already, it's already apparent that he won't let this go, because that just seems to be what happens, is that the characters that don't let this go seem to be the ones that push the storyline through or give us the next phase of alerts, the next phase of events. That's the only line I see remotely leading us into a season 5 if Frank and team are still there. Or it's the thing that ends season 4 and ends Frank's thing for it. In other words, it'll either A, completely and utterly end everything Frank is, and that's it, and then we move on, and that's the end of the show, or it becomes like season 5, we're following the Conways. It's like, okay, cool. Or B, Hammerschmidt confronts Frank, says all the things that he knows, because he'll probably learn everything. There won't be anything that he won't learn. He will learn all the facts that have happened. Because again, even Frank teasing it, in this episode, we talked to Durant, like, yeah, I killed Russo. Yeah, I killed Zoe. Psych! But if I wanted to, I could have.
Yeah.
I could kill you. That's it's very much a teasing moment of like, you don't have our main character drop that info outside of the fourth wall breakage and not have it mean anything, because it's that weird, it's that thing of like, it's the Chekhov's gun. It's that thing that's there. Like, it has to go off. It has to be fired. You don't have Hammerschmidt finding all these other, oh, he talked with Lanigan and money laundering. Like, no, that ain't the story,
right.
Cause even Nudbar says like, you gotta find something that Frank can't just make disappear. You gotta get him at this. And the only thing that is gonna happen is he's gonna learn all the secrets. But again, either A, it's going to mean something. In fact, that thread could go either A, it's gonna mean something. Yeah, cause there's no way he can kill him. There's no way that he could kill him, because it'll happen. He'll be like, I have a story for the president. And he'll come as a reporter. And it's like, former, this guy who's a smart guy and isn't stupid, has all this backing research, go through WikiLeaks or whatever. Who cares? But, somehow, there's going to be the confrontation. And it only goes to, I don't see him. I don't see like him meeting at the Oval Office and then Frank, shanking the guy. Cause that doesn't happen that way. Cause it's like, well, how do I cover that up? And B, I don't see them meeting. I don't see Hammerschmidt being dumb enough after he'll probably learn everything to meet him in anywhere but broad daylight, in a crowded room. And again, only knowing, go for it.
No,
I mean, this is all presuming that Hammerschmidt digs down to the very, very bottom of things and learns everything.
So we have not seen, from what you've seen, because I thought this was in the past, We have not seen Hammerschmidt's, well, I'm trying not to spoil you in case I should say it, but his tactic to protect himself. You have not seen that yet, right?
No, all he has done is stayed underground.
It must be the next episode or after.
Yeah. All he has done is stayed underground and kind of kept to himself. I mean, the only way that I can see it is that he puts under a pseudonym, and that's fine. But again, this is a guy, you know, that being Frank Underwood, that has learned a lot of things and has a lot of different data points at his disposal. Mm-hmm. Things that, you know, have already been set up. The idea, like, he has yet to pull the pin on him using any NSA stuff. Like, he's teased it. He's kind of, you know, toyed with it, but he's never outright used that gun, you know. And again, that's another Chekhov's gun, by the way. It's another thing that hasn't been pulled, another pin that hasn't been gone. And every time that he's wanted to use it, people said, like, shouldn't do that. But if it comes down to a, you know, it's either him, you know, either him or Hammerschmidt, you know, like that's an option that's there. And so there's a lot of things that, knowing all the different things, again, though he knows all that's going down and he's got all these threads in his head, I don't see, like, again, I never saw it going well for Hammerschmidt, but I do see that being potentially the thing that goes down. Like, maybe it's like he brings it and then an indictment happens and then, you know, then we go to an impeachment of some sort, you know.
Interesting.
Which is fair.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to ask you about Claire's future is I was wondering if you thought that maybe after this episode, it may not be so clear where Claire is in her mind because of what happened with her mother. By the way, I loved this episode with her mother so much because, and I'm going to try to get through this without crying, it reminds me so much of my own mother and a situation I'm going through. And she and I kind of have a similar sort of relationship.
Interesting.
Where things
okay.
go up and down.
Right.
But in the end, we know that we love each other. So what
right.
I loved about this is at the end, Elizabeth, who's Claire's mother, decides to take the last 2 weeks off of her life.
Yeah.
One, of course, because she's going to be more comfortable going that way. But two, she said, let me do this for you.
Let me help because you, let me, you know,
yeah,
let me help you for the first time in my life. Yeah, no, I thought
and
that was.
I think that, like, I just felt that I completely understood that because if she had gone without, because
yeah.
her plan was not to tell Claire that I'm in the last stages of hospice. I'm going. I don't need your help. If she had done that, she would have died thinking she left this on Claire. But now she's allowed Claire to walk
to move
her
forward.
Out of it,
yeah,
and Claire can walk away. So there, and then there was that whole sort of association with the darkness, and that
yeah.
that Claire wanted could make the dark end or the sun come up, and she, and then you know her with Tom, she's now with Tom, and the sun is kind of coming up in her life.
Yeah, but that's like what's funny about and, that, and
her speech, and her speech was very. The sun is open. It was very honest, too.
Oh, yeah.
She was completely honest, and that's what made that speech so effective. So, so that's why I thought, do you think that things will go differently for Claire now?
No, I mean, as differently as any of those sort of things have happened. And again, it's only because if this had been the first time those sort of things had happened in Claire's life, like, I mean, not mother's death, but just the idea of darkness to sun, darkness to sun, darkness to sun. I'd say, yeah, totally. It's going to work out great for her. She's going to be awesome and she'll probably hook up with Tom and everything else. But this has been such a repeat. This is, you know, cycle two, if you will, at least in the series. And I bet that there's probably a third one that I'm not even thinking about. But, you know, we've had so many of these sort of moments where Claire does the thing of like, I want kids. No, I don't want kids. I want to be with this photographer guy and do that. No, I shouldn't do that. I want to be an ambassador. You know, you see all these things go through her life. And the only overarching thing is that she keeps coming back to Frank for either, you know, for good or for bad. And so while I do see, you know, her and Tom probably, you know, having a fling and then doing the whole, like, you know, Tom's like, why don't you stay with me? And that, you know, much like with the photographer. That's just sort of how Claire is. Claire, when she's vulnerable, as she was very vulnerable then, mm-hmm. sometimes needs somebody. Mm-hmm. And Frank is unavailable.
Right.
And that's all. That's all it is. And
interesting.
Because that's such a repeating thing that I can't.
Had with Peter, yeah. The photographer. Absolutely.
Yeah. You're right. Like I can't like if it were different. And I didn't see all these parallels in Tom to Peter. Mm-hmm. I would say, yeah, no, totally. She's going to hook up and it's going to, you know, they're going to divorce, whatever, be fine. Awesome. Mm-hmm. But no, that's not how it works in the Underwoods. Like, I bet you Frank knows already. Mm-hmm. I bet you Frank knows, you know, am I in, or at least has some doubts, you know, just, and that doesn't matter to him because he also probably knew about the photographer.
Yeah.
You know, much like Claire knew about Zoe. Much like all these things, it's that's how they kind of roll.
Yeah, I actually, while preparing for this show, I went back to the end of the last episode because I wanted to clearly understand why Claire went to Texas. And again, it was because Kathy was getting suspicious of the convention and the push towards Claire, and so they wanted her to leave to make it look like she wasn't campaigning. And at first, they say go back to Washington, and she said no. Wait a minute, I'll go home to Texas. And then he said, take Tom with you so he can write the speech of the lifetime for you.
Yeah, exactly.
He says that speech is going to lay the groundwork as what we do for our campaign, you know, how we're going to reach the rest of the public. Which I think it did. I think that speech was excellent about how they need to, what they need to do, because they haven't won the hearts and minds of the American public at all. As far as what we see. And that's going to be the method they have to take to be that complete, honest, open relationship in front of everyone so that the American people feel like they're both married and they're sharing that office together, but they're also very open and transparent to us.
Yeah.
I'm kind of talking around in circles there, but it was interesting to see that, but Frank did say at that time, well, this is why we brought Tom back, right? And and then I saw that again and thinking, oh, well, yeah. And then Claire doesn't even respond. And it was Claire's decision to bring him back.
Yeah.
So, you know.
That's why.
I think you're right. I think you're right that Frank kind of just.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's if it wasn't a repeating pattern, I wouldn't be thinking this, but it's a repeating pattern.
They know each other so well, they don't have to speak words so many times.
Yeah, of course they do. That's why. And it's never, you know, there's always been that, you know. I mean, these are the guys that had a weird threesome with their Secret Service man who is shot, who took a bullet for the president. You know, these are the people we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. None of all of these facts are just like, I wish I could say like, no, totally. It's like, no, this is how the Underwoods roll. This is how Claire tends to roll. And Claire hasn't, not saying Claire hasn't changed. This is Claire hasn't changed because that's just how they are. Yeah. And that could be good or bad. It just depends on if that's the, you know, how you want to roll. Because I think Tom might think, you know, it's going someplace. It's going to go somewhere, but
he's really just, you know, one of their people, their sponsors, if you will.
Yeah. That's all. And it's not, again, If it weren't for every other bit of data that's been presented over the course of three seasons, from, you know, Claire dating a photographer to the, you know, to Frank dating a reporter and helping get her someplace, to them again doing a weird threesome with the man who would eventually take a bullet for Frank. I mean, how can I not think that? How can I not think that that's just what's going down? That is just, it was a vulnerable moment. Tom, you know, Claire needed somebody.
He was there to support and sponsor.
Right. And you know, and he'll probably go on and it'll probably be this thing. But again, it's not like Frank doesn't know, because Frank knows, because it's, again, it won't, or if Frank doesn't know, it's like, oh, okay, well, that's cool. Like, it won't matter, because that's such a reoccurring pattern that it's like,
no, you're right.
Mm-hmm. You know, let her do what she's got to do. And then eventually she comes back, because that's what happens. That's what's happened so many times from season one all the way here. That's like, I can't, you know, I can't. That's why I don't think it's much on a thread. That's why I don't really, why I've said that. Just like, it's such a repeating pattern.
Right. Speaking of sponsors.
Yeah. Speaking of sponsors, we should probably thank a couple of our own. We've talked about in the past, we have plenty of sponsors here, from 100TB.com to a slew of other, you know, network connectivity people and stuff like that. We haven't really talked about really how, you know, how you guys can kind of help out. And since we have so many sponsors and it's, we could spend all time thanking them. How about I just give you guys the one link that you're all going to need to get those sponsors and to help you guys out. And that's bridgetechnetwork.com/support-british-tech-network. Kind of weird, but you probably, you know, look it in and it has all the offer codes that exist. For there, you know, every one of them you could have in terms of that has all the ways you can help out, from the Patreon to sending through PayPal and all the different offer codes and all the different things that you can utilize. So, you know, choose how you want to support us. It's very easy to do. In fact, well, there's some free options like just giving a review on iTunes and giving a follow on Twitter. That costs you nothing. So not only A, are we going to save you money when it comes to the things you want to sign up for, but B, you know, you don't even have to spend any money to help us out.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. So, and also, there's another thing. Well, I had the main website up. I'll try to bring that back. We'll get,
yeah, because there's something that I mean.
I'm so jealous of anyone who gets to go.
We should probably talk about this. So this is actually in July 23rd. I got my brain has to think how to read dates like the rest of the world reads dates, which is actually the international format is date, month, year. It's just me that sort of has to think like American. But if you happen to be in I guess let's see where is it at?
That's
okay. If you're happy to be in Birmingham, I guess I don't know which section of the UK it's in, but you probably all know where it is. This is me being the ignorant American of like, I don't remember where Birmingham,
where Leeds is though, right?
Kinda. See, the problem is that like, there's like, this is how bizarre this sounds. Birmingham is, because I grew up in the north, a lot of those towns became that, like, I think of Birmingham, Detroit. In Michigan, like a suburb there. But that being said, this is in the UK. This is in Detroit. This is in Detroit in any capacity. This is actually over there in the UK in general. So if you happen to be there on July 23rd, go on there. And there's also a couple other things going down the bash. There's a couple things the day before. It seems like a whole kind of, you know, fun time.
Absolutely. And all I see the curry. UN has, it's going to take, there's an event taking place at the best curry place in the world. And I believe UN when he says that because, the British know their curry.
Well, the British invented.
I love, yeah, well, we were having that conversation before, but go ahead.
Yeah, the British, a lot of people think it's Indian, but it's not. British actually invented curry.
That for sure. Yeah,
the British invented curry, you know, so that's, if you want to go to a place that has really good curry, you know, head on over there. And so I would definitely trust that is the, you know, the best place for curry. I would not ever say that. But yeah, so check out the details. It's there on specifically at bridgetechnetwork.com/what-is-the-bash. So just look up what is the bash, and it should be pretty easy to find, and it'll give you all the details. I have actually a video there that I'll explain from last year's, 2015, but this year is that they're doing it again. And I wish I had money. Had I known, maybe I would have switched my trip from in September from Japan to someplace else. Maybe. I don't know.
Or at least have a layover, you know.
That's a hell of a layover, you know, going to the opposite side of the globe and then coming back. Yeah, that's a layover. That's what we call it. No, maybe next year if it's going to happen the same dates or sometimes around, I'll off planet ahead. Because I've been meaning to make
a
journey.
Put down a $10 deposit. You can sign up using that link, and then when you register, show up. It's £20. They already apply your $10 that you've paid, and then you get all the food, entertainment, and great people. A lot of good fun. I wish I could go. Anyways, I'm gonna cry because I can't go. I never get to go to anything.
It's okay.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Maybe next year I'll figure out, because I'm going to make a UK journey. So that might be something I'll do.
Yeah, good. So, get on the subject of thinking internationally.
Mm-hmm.
Frank pulls kind of a fast one on Kathy when her momentum kicks up.
And
pretends that there is an ICO, you know, the modern.
Something's happening when nothing's happening.
And nothing's happening. And so he drags her to the Situation Room, or the war room in Washington, and he won't even let her eat dinner alone.
No.
And he's slowly putting the pressure on her. He starts out real nice, and he says, "Well, Kathy, I can promise you that you'll continue."
Let's just cut to the chase, since we've already talked about all this stuff. Let's just cut to the last scene.
A knife on her.
Let's just get to there. Let's get to the meat of the story already.
Her reaction. I loved it because when he laughed and then he backtracked, and then he said, "But I would have killed them." And then she kind of just falls back onto the table.
That's because what's the greatest part about this, and this is what I always like Frank when he drops the demur, when he drops the veil, when we get to see the man that truly is Frank Underwood. And I love that because, again, we only see him during the fourth wall when he does that. He only talks to us, the audience, when he does that. Like, we only see him truly then. But I love it when he does it to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And part of me, when that scene kicked in, I was like, is this a dream sequence? Is he actually dropping this knowledge? Oh, crap, he is. This is awesome. This is amazing. This is finally.
He is completely not afraid of Kathy. Ooh. He's so calculated and careful. That for him to say something like that, I can't imagine any other character right now involved in his world that he would have said that to.
That's what I loved about that scene, because my brain was like, is this a trick? No, it's not. And the greatest thing about that sequence, just of him with the knife, it's just like, yeah, I killed Russo. Killed Zoe too. In fact, I had to go visit them when I had this weird hallucination, aka dying, and I had to deal with their spirits. And they rightfully so. I mean, I killed them both. So what can I do? Nah, I'm just playing. But I would have killed him. And I'll kill you. You know, essentially, you know, because again, he, just that line of him saying, like him sitting down. But if you cross me, you know, I will never, ever forget. It's just like, it's so amazing. It's such a brilliant scene. Like, there are few actors that can pull that off. And pull off the villain in a good way and make him scare the crap out of me. And Kevin Spacey is one of those actors. And if you ever want to see Spacey at his best in House of Cards, just watch this episode and watch that scene. Even if you don't really watch the show, you find that clip somewhere, because that is Spacey at his best, because you see him go from being completely honest, his character, and going joking, and then still threatening. Mm-hmm. And the idea that Kathy doesn't know, was he serious? Was he joking? He's right. No one would ever believe me anyways. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I don't know, but this man can kill me. Mm-hmm. And make me disappear probably. And it was such a moment, because you just see her just audibly get, you know, literally like, I'm gonna die here to a golden letter opener, and just the way he's like, he has it there, and he just casually tosses it, just like, all right, let's talk about those terrorist things. Just like, what the hell?
That's what I love the most. Is that line? He says, "All right, well, let's go see what we can do about these terrorists."
Yeah, it's like, let's get back to work.
Standing right in front of me, you are a terrorist because you're using your position, your power.
Oh yeah, no, but that's what I love. That's what I love.
I have no way of fighting back. Like, I love that line so much.
It's so funny. It's one of those scenes. Like, I love those scenes. And again, I loved it because Kathy was like, this could be it. I don't know how he'll get out of this, but this could be the end for me. Mm-hmm. And it was such a moment of just like, again, because he didn't like casually put it down in front of her. He just tossed it. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, and it lands, you know, right in the letter pile, the out pile. It's like, all right, let's get back to work. And it's just like, what the heck? Mm-hmm. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And again, it's a brilliant beat, a brilliant thing. Cause I always love when the veil gets dropped, when everything's sort of free. And all is well. But, you know, if you do want to watch Spacey at his best as an actor, and his best as his role of Frank Underwood, as this sort of weird villainous protagonist that really is the antagonist of the story, that's the scene to watch. Cause it was such a surprise for me to see that, because I didn't know how it was going to go down. And it was just like the minute he dropped it, I was like, this is amazing. This is an amazing piece of writing. This is an amazing piece of acting. And it's one of those things just like, oh man, that, like, I almost want to go back to the
episode. It's so much fun to play that character.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's Kevin, it's Spacey at his best in the series. And that's the best way I can put it. Cause there's no other ways around it. It is the idea that this is the scene that's like, yeah, there's no, I don't know if there's a better scene. Like, there's better moments where he's talking as a fourth wall breaking. And I think, you know, especially the whole, you know, the FU at the beginning of season two. But in this season and in general, him being a character in the show, being that, like, that is so by far probably the highlight for me of this entire show. Yeah. That might be my highlight just because again, it's dropping the veil. It's dropping some science, dropping some knowledge, and just because again, knowing us, the audience, what we know, he could have done it,
yeah,
and it wouldn't have been out of character, but because he didn't, and the idea of like, but I can.
I actually, this is up there in one of my favorite episodes of this season, and I think it's because I have a good handful of them that I think are good, excellent episodes. That's why I agree. Like, you know, we had Tom Merritt on recently, and he said this might be his favorite. It's a very close favorite to season one, which you can't replace because of season one.
Right.
But I agree. I agree. They did an excellent job. I mean, there've been those times. I don't know. Every time they bring Petrov into it, I just know we're going here again. Like, we just, you know, move.
This is the Russians. The Russians are always a thing. It's they're the classic villains in real politics and in fake politics.
And I love how they did bring him in, but they brought him in just by a newspaper that says, yes, she was not even in the room. Basically, Petrov confirms that Secretary Durant had nothing to do with the negotiations.
That's because Petrov loves.
And he didn't. He completely hated Kathy. You know, because she was a woman. I don't
know. No, it's not even that. It's that.
Definitely that gender thing going on, but that was a whole, because this is also because of the way he treated Claire, but he had more respect for Claire, you know?
Oh yeah, because Claire stood up to him, mm-hmm. You know, and whether or not, you know, whether she's in the wrong or not doesn't matter, but Claire stood up to him.
We need a whole like episode around that. We had it in the newspaper and it was.
Because Petrov loves seeing his name in print.
That's exactly.
That's all. He loves seeing his name, which, you know, I'm the same way. I'll do a lot of things just to see my name and things. That's why I kickstart a lot of projects, is just see my name in the credits.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
I've been starting that lately. the trick worked, or the pressure worked, and we have that final scene where Kathy just bows out and says she can do so much better as Secretary of State. She can't, because they never allowed her to. Oh. I mean, it wasn't even so much that she couldn't do it. They tricked her every step of the way so that Claire would get the credit. Claire would be the person to handle things.
Again, it's at that point, that was, I don't know if that wasn't a Frank move. That was definitely a Claire move,
yeah.
Beginning of it, but, you know, became a very much a Frank move. Again, it's the Underwoods. It's how they roll.
So I guess our last thing is we can talk, we've already talked.
It's the last thread, the thread that has to get tied up one way or another. And that's Seth and Stamper and the entire team. And really Seth standing up to Stamper, you know, that seemed like, it's cool. Like, a lot of the things that like matter to me more are just Stamper, like, does the whole donation. And then we see the email with the words Francis Underwood on there
and
the subject line or cause I don't think it was a two line. So I don't know what that's going to be. But to me, that signals a very much, this is going to be closing. I do feel that Stamper is going to leave in some capacity, mm-hmm. not necessarily get fired. You know, he's not going to earn a firing.
Well, he's always been so close to a complete breakdown.
Right. And like I said, there's only so much
that up and
well, because his guilt is finally eating up at him, and he's got a lot of guilt.
Well,
and the thing is that.
You know, from the whole Rachel thing, and then recovery, and then right when he recovers, he falls down in the bathroom.
Because somebody dropped, like the big.
It gets so close, and then, you know.
Well, because, like, he had closed the chapter on Rachel quite deliberately, and I thought that was going to be the end, too. But then somebody drops, you know, this weird guilt bomb on him. And now he's got to, you know, deal with it all. And he's dealing with it, but I don't think he's quite dealt with it. Because he's done the donation, and that was part one. But part two is probably letting Frank know, hey, by the way, your organ went to, you know, was supposed to go this guy. But I did this for you, Frank. I love you. Or something. I don't know, because there's only so many ways this goes down, and it's such a weird thing.
I like this. I like this little dynamic with now that Leanne is a part of it, and as you said, Seth, Stamper's not a team player, and Seth is, there was no shock here. When Stamper said, "Let's go upstairs." You know, I was thinking of what, so he could put another glass jar in his face. And then he ends up saying that. He's like, I know you could do that if you want, but you know, we need to work together. And I should hate you for this.
Yeah.
Which, you know, he actually does probably hate Stamper, but Seth is very good about this. And we saw this from the beginning of Seth that firm that Remy tried to pay off Seth to get information on Frank in the Underwoods, and he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't budge. He wouldn't, you know, and he said many times, well, why won't I? Of course I'm working for you, Remy. You could pay me so much more. And then it finally came out that it has nothing to do with the money. Seth is also very ambitious in staying in that White House. So,
yeah. That's what he does. He wants that. And that's cool. And so that's why I'm like, yeah.
So
that's why I'm more fascinated, like, how Stamper gets out.
Because
that's the only, again, I don't see him staying, even though, honestly, he should stay. And if he were a way more stable person, he would stay, but he is not stable.
Yeah.
And we're just seeing him go. I think we've said all we have to say.
I think so, too. And my apologies to our audio listeners. If you heard me typing, that is because we had a pretty active chat room. And I want to thank, Tensor Guy and Muller Biker, for your comments. Tensor Guy had a good point about how it's so creepy how it's mirroring the current American politics.
It always is and always will, because
actually now it seems like our U.S. what's going on in the U.S. is even more bizarre and chaotic than what's happening in the House of Cards.
What's funny about the U.S. politics, and this is all I will say about U.S. politics, and all I'll say about this is that I know we all say it's bizarre, and I know we all say it's weird, and I know we all say it's that and this and that, and there's all these things going on, and that we're scared or not or whatever.
No.
I mean, well, it's the idea that, like, cause I know a lot of people are like, you know, this is bizarre, you know, and if I get political people, I apologize. This is bizarre. Donald Trump's the GOP guy. Will the GOP, you know, rally behind him? Sanders is getting an up thing. Will that screw over Hillary Clinton? In the end, and it's becoming very apparent, especially with Trump and how he's doing things, they're all going to go back to center. It's going to repeat, because that's kind of how this goes. Maybe that's why this is so spot on, because politics tends to have cycles, tends to have these things happen.
Swinging pendulum.
Yeah, the swinging pendulum. And that might be why House of Cards is like feels so dead on at times and mirrors at times, because if you start looking at history, you know, there are these things, you know, it's like as you're like, you know, you have as a president's last term, you have someone trying to, you know, leave a legacy and that kind of thing. I think that's what makes House of Cards, the fiction, so appealing, is because we all think that, oh, it has to do with our time. Oh, this is us. Even though in the past we brought up, oh, this is what FDR did. This is what, you know, those people did and everything else. It's because there's politics is that weird thing that kind of, you know, comes and goes and flows and ebbs and everything.
Well, I mean, you could also kind of compare it to the fact that the story is based off of a much older show written for the UK.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I mean, your point is 1,000%.
So, you know, and that's what's cool about it. That's why I'm so hesitant to talk about,
I guess there's been a lot of stories about how, you know, the writers were questioned about writing the show. Because it almost seemed that they were sort of predicting current events, but I think that the current events have definitely changed since this season came out, and who knows? And I think one of the exciting things is you and I, we've got one more show, and then, you know, so we've got three more of these, you and I are going to do one final one. And then we won't, next time we meet together, it'd be February of next year or March, and we'll have another American president. So who the heck knows?
Yeah. Who knows? It's one of those things just like, I don't, you know, but, it's very weird to look at like how politics works and to just sort of do it from this overhead view and realize it just sort of repeats, not because it's bad, but because it's just the nature of the election year. It's like, you know, every 2 years we voted in somebody and if that party's not doing so hot, the other party comes in and says we can do it better. And you know, that's why I think House of Cards seems to mirror our world a lot closer. And it's like they seem to predict things because it's happened before.
Yeah.
It'll happen again.
Yeah, until there's a revolution and there's a lot of elements.
Until
we don't have that here in America.
Until Freedom TM and Damon happen as reality, we will continue to repeat the cycle. But until then, you can, of course, watch our stuff and have way more fun. Where can they check out our stuff, Jackie?
Well, they can check you out, I know, because I watch my so-called 8-bit life religiously. And they can reach all of that at Cosmic Radio TV.
Yep.
And I don't know, what's my Twitter handle?
Oh, your Twitter handle is at Jackie Hearn. I forget the number. It was 81.
That's right.
That's your Twitter. And what about mine? Mine has a number, though, too, doesn't it?
Yours is at Vincent404.
Now, here's the next question, though.
Vincent, where are you?
Yeah.
Vincent?
Now here's a real question, though. Let's say that they're new to this show.
Oh.
And they want to check out previous episodes of this show. What if they want to actually come to hear and listen to us talk about House of Cards? Where can they go?
Well, following us on Twitter, you'll get notice when we're posted on the British Tech Network. So you go to BritishTechNetwork.com. Also, please go to iTunes.
Yes.
On there. And we are doing pretty good in the ranking of House of Cards shows.
Yeah.
And we're definitely the most different one. And the only one with video that I'm aware of. Give us a review. Say, you know what, you guys are getting your acts together. Or at least Jackie is, because the responsibility that's lacked has been mine all my
life. It's okay. Well, regardless of that, we are there. So let us know what you think there. Give us a rating.
Yeah.
Trust me, it helps and it makes us feel better about things.
All right. So I will see you guys next week. And Roberto, I'll see you in 3 weeks.
See you all later.
Bye.
Bye.